Thriving, Not Surviving, with your host, Gina Gardner. To lead others, you first need to be the best version of yourself and lead from a place of wholeness. Motivation, empowerment, leadership, personal and spiritual development are just a few of the topics you will hear on Thriving, Not Surviving. So sit back and enjoy the show with your host, Gina Gardner.
Hello there. It's Gina Gardner here, and I am thrilled today to be able to introduce my guest, Vanessa Burt. I first met Vanessa at a Bee Collaboration meeting, and I was really very struck about this lady who had so much wonderful warmth and energy. She's very talented, and I'm really thrilled to invite her to be my guest in today's interview. I'm going to read you her bio because I think it's one of those things that I'd like to set the scene and I'd like to get it right rather than having, you know, an approximation. So forgive me while I read. Vanessa Louise, intuitive guide for transformation through healing for your whole self. Spending over 25 years in the cosmetic industry, it became very apparent that no matter how fabulous you look on the outside, it made little difference to how you felt on the inside. Vanessa soon realized the true beauty of another was knowing and expressing the beauty of their own heart. And that's a philosophy that is so in tune with my own. I think it's really, really great. Vanessa's personal challenges stripped her bare of everything she believed to be true, and she was forced to look in the mirror at the hero who would rescue her. Vanessa's mission is to enable others to recognize their own magnificence, connect to and reveal their truest self, and express themselves with confidence, purpose, and joy. Just as nature intended to cocoon the cocoon to become the butterfly, you too are destined to live a beautiful and a harmonious life. It's a choice. And again, absolutely believe that everything we do is our choice. So welcome, and thank you very much. I'd be really grateful if, to start with, you'd share your story with our listeners and our viewers, you know, so they get the essence of how you've reached this point.
Oh, bless you. Thank you, Gina. It's a real honour to be with you and chat with you today. Thank you for asking me. It's interesting because actually as you read the bio there, it still sends shivers down my spine because it's almost like that's not me, if that makes sense, even though I know it encapsulates who I am as an individual. My journey. From a very young age, I grew up quite confused because I had a beautiful upbringing with two wonderful parents. I and my sister, who is a couple of years younger than me, is my best friend. We led a very blessed life. My dad worked incredibly hard building his own business. My mum was around all the time looking out for my sister and I. She was a stay-at-home mum. So my confusion came when I realised at a young age I didn't like myself. And I thought, how can I not like myself very much if I do lead a blessed life and my parents are amazing and we have fun and spend lots of time together? And I struggled at school. I realised I don't learn the conventional way, like many people. But being sat in a classroom, listening to people teach, I just recognised I didn't learn and I wasn't excited about what I was being told. I was really quite shy. And it wasn't until I was about 13, 14 years of age that it really struck me as I was asked to think about what I wanted to be when I grew up and what I wanted to do in the world. And all I wanted to do was help people feel better about themselves. And like I said, it struck me because I just thought it's because I hated myself. So that became my mission in life. How I did that, I had no idea. So it really, within the next couple of years, it was actually my mum, bless her, who encouraged me to pursue one of my talents, which was I danced since I was 6 years old and enjoyed making up my little friends in competitions. And she said to me, you're really quite good at this, so why don't you go down the beauty therapy route? And that made perfect sense. So I did that. I really enjoyed nurturing people, looking after people and helping them feel better on the outside. I then worked on the cruise liners as a facial therapist, which I absolutely loved. And I recognised there that I wanted the work I did to be more engaging with people. So I didn't really want to sit in a twink in a room with twinkly music massaging people. I wanted to be more engaged in conversation and be more active. So I actually then trained as a TV and film makeup artist. And I recognised that as they sat in my chair before they went either on stage or in front of the camera, whether they were used to being in front of the camera or whether they were guests or contestants on shows, I recognised I had this, or it was fed back to me, I had a very calming influence, and they would all be fighting over my chair before they went on stage. And so it's not until you kind of feel as you naturally evolve in life that you learn so much about you. So I then decided to set up my own business in skincare and cosmetics, because I was now sort of early 20s and I wanted to be a stay-at-home mum, like my mum, but also work. And so I met this chap, and we settled down and we had two beautiful children. And it wasn't until they were very young that we recognised that there was real problems with addiction. With my then my now ex-husband, and I really struggled myself with how do I deal with somebody who is on self-destruct while looking after two children, while really trying to also make a life for myself as well. And I did the very best I could for the best part of a decade. And it wasn't until I got to my breaking point in 2008 where I just thought, something's got to change. It was an episode that happened, and in that moment I just recognised that if it's meant to be, it's up to me. And as a result, so that's probably now what 12 odd years ago, luckily my dad had brought me up on the mindset of, if you really put your mind to something, you can really create the life that you want. So this was the time to really apply that. And I just recognised that if I wanted to help people feel better about themselves, to create the life that they want, I needed to start with myself. So I became my own best client. And I really just put systems in place to support my growth. I didn't realise I was doing that then. It's only on reflection, which is one of the things that I love about my work, is that I became my own best client. So I'm now able to support people as best I can in helping them recognize that they too are the creators of their own lives. And I now have met and married my dream come true. I've got two beautiful teenage children who I'm really proud to say are really making an impact in their own lives as well. So just by being the example, I think, is the loudest voice right now. We all know a lot of stuff, and we all know that this stuff works, but really being the example is my main focus each and every day.
That's amazing. Thank you very much for sharing that. I know many people are dealing with partners or children or family members who have an addiction, and it touches so many lives, doesn't it?
Very much.
The interesting thing, I think, you know, when I meet people who are, particularly those who have gone on their journey and are helping others, how often there's such a challenge that they've overcome, you know, the hero's journey, that they've walked their talk, they've gone through the dark night of the soul, and they've found that the solution is within them, not externally. So thank you very much. I'm really interested that you talk about, I'd like to focus on energy and how all of our problems and struggles in life are as a result of disconnection from that energy. Now, many of our viewers and listeners may not be familiar with the principle of energy. Can you talk about energy? What do you mean in that context?
Well, it's my understanding, and I think from a very young age, another reason why I just felt so confused was because I kind of felt like I knew stuff that when I talked to people about it, they had no idea what I was talking about. So I felt like I would know things, and people would just look at me like I had two heads. I've now come to understand that there's an energy that turns this world, grows the grass, and beats our hearts. And we know that energy is in us, because if you've ever seen anybody that has either passed on, then you know that they are not the person that you knew that they were, because this energy is now no longer beating their hearts. And I think disconnection comes from a place where we just don't recognize, appreciate, or haven't been taught that that power that does align the planets, turns the world, grows the grass, brings out the daffodils in spring, is the very energy, the intelligence that creates this body, grows this body, repairs this body. And there is that intelligence, while we're not thinking about it, is breathing us, it's beating our hearts, it's there is so much. We're such a miracle, and the disconnection for me is just that we just don't appreciate that that is true. So I've really learned to try and articulate as best I can and help people understand that we are everything and nothing all at the same time. And it wasn't until I thought to myself, how do I help people understand that? And I, like I do, I send up my questions to the universe, and I was woken up with a rainbow on my carpet in my bedroom. And I thought, of course, there was a glass prism on my window ledge. And I recognized that the sunshine that was shining through my prism, and I did pick up this in school, that by refraction, science tells us that that creates a rainbow. And I thought to myself, if we are the prism, if the analogy of that glass prism is us, the human being, then we appreciate that the sunlight is that invisible, powerful energy that shines through us. Then that's what I believe as how we show up authentic, and we demonstrate our true colors. And then I thought to myself, but hold on, if the clouds were out that day, I wouldn't have seen that rainbow. The prism is still there.
Yes.
The sun is still there behind the clouds. So they're still doing their thing. But the disconnect that stopped that light shining through the prism that gave me that beautiful rainbow on the carpet was the clouds. And I thought to myself, of course, because in all the things I've understood about my own transformation is that when my analytical mind gets in the way, mm-hmm. and I'm in the busyness and the noise of my head and not listening to the essence of who I am, my heart, then that's the block. That for me is the clouds. And I kind of then demonstrated that as like a lead umbrella that blocks the sun from coming through the prism, and we are then unable to express ourselves authentically in our true colors. So when you think about that analogy of the sunshine shining through us as the prism and those colors, we all know what it feels like to be in that beautiful flowing place. You know, we're compassionate, we're loving, we're peaceful, we're joyful, we're excited, we're enthusiastic. We're grateful. It's green lights all the way to Earth, isn't it? You know, it's such a beautiful feeling. But we also know what it's like when the clouds come in, when the lead umbrella comes in, and we don't have that connection. We're frustrated. We're shameful. We're angry. We're ill. We're depressed. We're anxious. We're bored. You know, all of those low-level negative emotions. And I've come to understand that if I can help each and every one of us understand that the two things exist, and only when they coexist in you as a human being, so you've got the invisible and the visible part, when you can allow yourself to be connected to that energy, amazing things happen. You open yourself up to whatever you want, all the possibilities that you want rather than what you don't want. And that's the problem, is that people, they create their own clouds, they create their own stories, and they're stuck focusing and using their imagination in the wrong way to create what they don't want, because that's what we're conditioned and trained, that what we don't want is, you know, and we rely too much on the physical,
yeah.
and on the invisible, the, you know, the invisible part. And it's just become such a passion of mine. So I really try and help people understand that human prism principle that really woke me up.
Yeah.
That's what I want to help us all understand. And then it's up to us individually, as it's a choice as to whether I connect to that or not.
It's really interesting. And as you're talking about the cloud, for me, I'm interested in your take on my interpretation, if you like, that, you know, that cloud comes in many forms, as do the clouds in the sky.
Yeah.
And that for me is around our beliefs about ourselves and the world. They act as a filter, don't they, in terms, or a block in terms of the sunlight coming through. I'm not worthy, I'm useless, I can't do that. That's a block, isn't it? If you believe you can't, then it's like having one of those grey days where there's not a chink in the sky, all you can see is grey clouds. But also it's our conditioning. You know, we're conditioned, aren't we, to believe things are as, you know, keep your station, don't get above yourself. You know, who are you to try and fly? So I think it's a really good analogy, and I think one that people can take on board.
Well, absolutely, and I love what you said about the, you know, don't get above your station, because anybody who believes what we believe and applies ourselves as best we can every day, and let's just remember that we are also human. So we have our moments of doubt, we have our kind of, you know, our times in anger or frustration. Because the other thing that I've come to understand is that one of the universal laws, you know, we're governed, our lives are orchestrated by laws, whether we like it or not.
Gravity, for example, you can't defy the act of gravity unless you go up into space, for example.
So these laws, and one of those is the law of polarity. So we live in a world of duality, hence the invisible and the visible, you know, the sunlight and the prism. When we deny, so it's like, I call it like the line of life, it's like both ends of the stick, if you like, right? When we deny one end of the stick, you can't have the North Pole without the South Pole. And I think we are so conditioned, and we're not taught to trust ourselves, so that when we rely so much on just one part of us, it doesn't work. Whereas if we can understand that there is a law of polarity, that we live in a world of duality, and hot and cold and up and down and in and out and right and wrong and all the rest of it, positive and negative, you have to experience both ends of the stick. And it's my belief that we are here to express ourselves as best we can. Our natural expression, our innate being is joy, right? And I believe that's what I'm here to teach the world and help us connect to that place as best we can. But here's the thing, when we're not in our joy and we're in pain, then it's just a matter of just navigating yourself through both sides. And it's not that once you recognize your magnificence, or once you connect to your inner being and that energy that turns the world and beats your heart, once you connect to that, it's not like you've got the, you know, you're there, you're done, and you can take your foot off the gas. It's a movable feast. It's a bit like a guided missile. We're 99% off track. But the thing I find is that we concentrate too much on balance, and it's, oh gosh, this is hard work, rather than actually flowing ourselves between both sides, that the up and the down, the left and the right, the in and the out, and just allowing the energy that does flow through us, is recognized as an emotion and a feeling. Just allow it to flow through you. I know it's easier said than done, but just like your breakfast, just allow the energy to flow through you, and you'll find that you are stronger, more enthusiastic, more excited, more loving, more peaceful. And not that the other side doesn't exist, but you are better equipped to flow through it. But also, you find that becomes less. But equally, if it does show up, because it's likely to, that you have the wherewithal to navigate yourself around it, through it, etc. It's just that when we deny it, it will just come and bite you on the back.
I think, you know, the polarity of things that you talk about is something that many people wrestle with. You know, that they are frightened of what they see as negative emotions, and even the language that we give it, you know, negative emotions as opposed to positive ones. For me, those emotions that we see as negative are there to tell us something.
Absolutely.
There's a lesson in them. So if you're feeling guilty, the lesson is, you know, okay, this is not sitting in line with your values. It's telling you, put things right and don't do it again. Find a different way. Yeah. And I think that, you know, people recognizing the emotion for what it is, acknowledging it, almost making friends with it, and then allowing it to pass through. And I love your analogy of breakfast, because on its way through our alimentary canal, we take all the nutrients from it. We take what we need from it, and then when we've taken what we need, then we let it go. And I think that's a beautiful way of looking at life and emotions. You know, we need to learn. We don't learn from when life is just jogging along nicely, do we?
No, not experiencing that contrast. And yeah, my definition of experiencing contrast, I know what I want because I know what I don't want. And the thing is that I loved what you said about negative, and that the language that we give it, we can understand. I mean, it makes us sound like a battery, doesn't it, when we say positive and negative. But as long as we understand that the label just gives it a distinction rather than the fact that negative is bad. Negative is not bad. And this is what I try and help my clients understand, is that if you have what I call a low-level emotion, so we've got elevated emotions on the emotional scale, the love, the joy, the peace, etc., and a low-level emotion, you know, your guilt, your shame, your anger, your frustration, they don't make us feel very good. They're not bad, but they make us feel bad. And that's the difference, is people, we're not taught, and people are not encouraged to understand that just because an emotion makes you feel bad doesn't mean you are bad or it is bad. It just makes me feel bad. So once I can recognize that my vibe's a bit, you know, maybe I might be like that, oh, would you turn down your music? Or, oh God, I'm running late. You start to feel that in yourself. Recognize it, as I liken it to the bumpers on a bowling alley. So if you've ever been bowling with children, they put the little bumpers up, don't they, so that their balls don't go down the ruts?
Yeah.
So when I was bowling with my kids years ago, I thought to myself, brilliant, this negative emotion really is a bit of a bumper to say, hey, girlfriend, you're coming off your centre a little bit, your joyful, loving centre, come back. And we're not taught that. We're taught that if I'm feeling shame, I am bad. You know, anger, I am bad. You know, this isn't good. You know, and therefore, as a result of not wanting to feel bad, we suppress it, we run away from it, or we hide it. And that's where problems come, because what you resist persists. And any time you go, I don't want to feel this thing because it makes me feel bad, therefore I am bad, and I don't want the outside world to see me as bad. I want the outside world to see me as the opposite of that, good, kind, or whatever, or happy. Then it's like a snowball. It just, the more you go, no, 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 the more it's going to come up, bite you on the backside when it would be embarrassing or shameful. Or so when you said make friends with it, that is exactly what I try and help people understand. When you are triggered, when you are aggravated by something, when you don't feel very good, as best you can, sit with that and just, it's Debbie Ford, actually, the shadow work that I did with her. She helped us sit with that negative emotion. So for me, it was angry, and I couldn't be seen as angry because Vanessa's joyful and kind. She can't be seen as angry. So I'd be like that. No, I'm very much this, you know, little Miss Sunshine. But I sat with angry Annie and I asked her, why are you here? And she had a very strong persona, and she had red hair and a very boxy frame and was really sort of quite brute looking. And she sat down on the bench with me, this is in my mind's eye, and she said to me, I'm here to help you stand up for yourself. And the fact that I denied her, younger part of me, I just became a flipping doormat that was just like anything for a quiet life, because, you know, I'm happy and all the rest of it. But once I really made friends with my anger, it still sometimes gets the better of me, but I now know what to do with it.
Yeah. Do you not think with our emotions, particularly the negative ones, we create these incredibly elaborate and entrenched stories. And, you know, it's the story that we create. I'm interested, you talked about, you know, we want everybody else to see us as this Little Miss Sunshine or whatever our version is. And we've all got them. But actually, so often it's not what other people think about us that actually is the one that generates this need to bury, suppress, fight. It's us.
Yeah.
We don't want to see ourselves as being human.
Well, Absolutely. So that's what drives the story. So if I want the outside world to see me as this, because ultimately we want to belong, we want to connect, we want to be loved. Everybody has that in us. So if I want to belong and I want to be loved, you can't see me as the miserable bitch. You can't see me as angry Annie. You have to see me as little Miss Sunshine, because that's what I think. And because I deny this miserable, angry part of me, then the effort that it takes for me to be happy and
calm, it's bigger and bigger and bigger. It's exhausting, isn't it?
And I'm trying too much with this to help you see that that is who I am. And that's when then we become the people pleaser and all this stuff. And then we make up these stories in our heads. And then those stories then create the situations and the surroundings around us to reaffirm that we are miserable and angry.
Yeah.
Until I accept that that is part of who I am, because I'm a human being, not because I am miserable and angry.
No, it's just in that moment or in that situation, we are so many different facets of ourselves, aren't we? So many different people. Yeah. What I'd like to, I mean, one of the interesting things, you talk about working with people to get naked, and I think it's genius, really. But I think it would be really helpful for those who are watching and listening to this. You know, what do you mean by getting naked? Because it brings up all sorts of connotations.
Absolutely, absolutely. And here's the interesting thing: I sat with naked in here without really knowing what it was for quite a while. And I have what I call the naked dream for as long as I can remember. Ever since I was a little girl, I would be caught in the local high street, no clothes on. And I was just, oh my God, I just didn't know what to cover myself up. And I kept having this dream, and I was pointed at and laughed at in my dream. So I was humiliated, embarrassed and ashamed and et cetera, et cetera. And I kept having this dream, and I thought it was because I had weight issues. I'd always been overweight. And then when I transformed, I kind of sorted my life out, and I lost 6 stone after having my son, and I still had the dream. And I was like, my body feels good. It's energetic. It's slim. But why am I still having this naked dream? And it sat with me for a couple of years until I realized, oh my gosh, naked is being seen as your true self. And that's like, what is my true self? I'm so frightened of sharing, and it's not safe. My experience had been where I had been sexually abused in the past or attacked or date raped, what the connotation of naked for me was not safe. So once I reframed what naked meant for me, and it was actually showing up as my true self, it's like, well, who is that then?
Yeah.
Who is my naked self? And that's where I learned about or understood the law of polarity, the prism, the fact that I am everything and nothing. And the best way for me to feel safe is to embrace myself as a complete person. I couldn't keep putting myself out there as this, I'm happy and I'm everything's great, when I was going home and crying myself to sleep because it was all just rubbish and I just had no control over it. And once it takes real courage to be naked. It also takes real courage to accept this part of you that you just despise, you just hide, you know, and once you can marry the two together, once both ends of the stick are present, if you like, and showing up as naked is just my true self. It's understanding that you are truly magnificent, the energy, you show up by connecting and recognizing who you truly are, and you show up as that person, then there is no effort. It's effortless. There's no effort in pretending to be kind or happy or strong, or it's innate.
It's interesting in the language we use. You talk about getting naked. For me, it's about stepping into your genuine power. And it doesn't matter which words you use, so long as you do it, really.
And there's the thing, Gina. We can all understand this. We all can get it and go, brilliant. And we can have a mate that's struggling. We can say, you just need to connect. Just meditate. Connect to that thing and show up as yourself. Great. But unless you're actually applying it and truly connecting and being it, so you think it, you do it to then be it. And there, I believe, people struggle with the whole transformation process.
I agree.
With this caterpillar, we've consumed all this stuff which is information and materialistic and knowledge and just life.
Yeah.
Get to the point where we're like, okay, we know the next stage is to wrap myself up in a cocoon, to die away from that, to become something else. But we go, but no, hold on, that's going to be painful. It's going to be painful. And then stuff comes up. And your soul, your essence, your purpose, whatever you want to call it, the reason why we're here is to expand, right? So if that's naturally just like the blooming of a flower once you've planted a seed, if we're putting a brick on it and going, absolutely no way, it's going to cause more pain.
Of course it is.
And that if we face it, put ourselves in that cocoon and just trust, which I totally appreciate is difficult.
Yes.
Simple, but it's difficult.
And I think it's particularly difficult if you're attempting to do it entirely on your own.
Yeah, massively, yeah.
So getting some support, some help, and just somebody to say, you know, you're going to be okay. You know, stick with it. This is the right, you're on the right path, I think is helpful.
What we do, isn't it? Because we've been through that ourselves. I wished I'd had somebody on the same page as me as I was doing this for myself. I had beautiful support. I had people that were able to encourage me. But there is something very special about somebody using the same language as you that resonates with you, that connects you, that literally is there to hold your hand in your heart and hold the space for you and go, come on, it's there, you're nearly there. Honestly, it's going to feel uncomfortable. That's absolutely fine. Because I think when we don't have that around us, we're sort of like, but this doesn't, I feel like I've hit a brick wall. And then we just go back.
Yeah.
And then we're hitting that brick wall and then we go back.
Yeah.
And it's that, whereas if there was somebody to say, absolutely, well done, you've hit the brick wall, right? So now what we need to do is encourage you to accept yourself, let go, all of this. And it's just, it is a toughie. And as long as we can keep showing up as being the example of our work, then it's, as I say to my clients, we can send the invitation, but we can't make them accept.
Yeah.
So our role, I believe, because I know I'm in my Vanessa-shaped hole in the world, and I know that you believe you're in your genie-shaped hole, and if we keep showing up with the language and the example and the experience that we have, it's just a bit like fishing. The right people will bite at the right time because that's what they're looking for. And so
it really brings you. So who do you work with? Who are the people that take on your hook?
I'm predominantly women because I am one, so I think that's where I resonate. The ages of 40 and 60, because we've got to that point generally, and this is where I have recognized from the women that I help, this is their demographic, if you like. They're mothers. They have a purpose in the world, whether they're working or not, but they get to that point where they go, something, I just feel there's something more to me. They're young enough to have the energy to still grab it by the horns and go for it, but they're wise enough to know that all of this has been worth it. But that turning point, they're almost willing to wrap themselves up in a cocoon, but they're just like, so how do I do it? And that's why it's really important for us to stay buoyant and doing our thing and stay consistent. And then, oh my gosh, that's it. That made so much sense. And then something that I say that resonates with them, and I'm sure you're the same, it's never what we say, it's how it resonates with that person.
Yeah.
It's not that I know anything really different to anybody else. We all know this. But if the language I use or the way I show up in the world triggers and resonates something within you, you are then inspired to do something about that, whether that's to carry on working with me, whether that's to then, you know, Google or read something that I've suggested, or do something else. And that's our job in the world. Is, I say, my job, my role is to make myself obsolete. You know, show people how to do it for themselves. Because we're the only ones that are with us 24 hours, 7
days. And I think that's really important, because so many therapists, you know, coaches, I think create a dependency model. when I know that both of us are passionate about. This is about helping people step into the capacity to recognize their own worth and to fly.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
We all have it within us. And this isn't to say that we've got it all worked out. And
not at all. We're on our own journey, aren't we?
Absolutely. But from our experience, because we understand the concept of transformation and the butterfly, and that's the other thing, is that that butterfly will lay an egg and die away, and then the whole cycle begins again. I have gone through that transformation cycle so many times in my life, and I'm actually at it again now.
Yeah.
So even though I'm like, right, okay, there's still this thing that I need to work through, push through, let go of, because the next level is calling me, my next calling of evolvement. But it doesn't mean we stay here. We just keep doing this.
Yeah.
And that's the other thing, is that once we've done it once, we go, oh gosh, I'm gone, I'm done, good, I'm enjoying myself. You take your foot off the pedal, nothing stops moving. The energy is always flowing. And as soon as we go, oh, I'm done now, to do, it's, no, we just trip ourselves up. It's a constant flow. We're never done. Yeah.
So what do you offer people? You know, we know who you work with, but what is it that actually you're offering people in what shape does your help come into?
Oh, well, I mentor one-to-one, and I do group mentoring, but I've got a new program that I'm developing at the moment. So all I'm asking for at the minute is, let's connect, let's have conversations. If the naked idea suits you, resonates with you in any way, then look out for what we're doing on Facebook. So follow me on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all that, where I share my message on whatever platform works for you, LinkedIn. We've got a naked tribe where we share how this is working for us, the tools and the techniques, and people engage and share their things. So I'm building that community at the minute as a result of then being able to support them properly as we then put out our program that we're building at the moment. Brilliant. So really, we're really excited about it. It's in the making. I've got an awesome team that's bringing it all together, and it's about my main thing, my biggest thing, is helping people understand that it's day by day, or moment by moment, minute by minute, hour by hour, day by day. It's not a big thing you're looking for. It's unlearning what you believe to be true. And that was a Course in Miracles really struck me. A quote from A Course in Miracles: you believe in the insanity because you created it, but you do not believe in love because you did not. That's true. That really resonates. But why? And you replace the words, you believe in the story because you created it, but you don't believe in who you truly are because you didn't. Mm-hmm. And we can unlearn what we believe to be true about ourselves.
Yes.
Relearn what is actually true. And the unlearning of that is the painful bit, because then, you know, you've got to, it takes daily habits.
Yes.
Unconscious programs and stories that drive our life. They're so subconscious, we're not aware of them.
Yeah.
If we can become aware of what it is that's driving us, and we do that by listening to that low-level emotion, yeah, it doesn't make us feel very good. Perhaps where we might be judging or criticizing others, that's a really key way of a subconscious program, where we're triggered, where we react and sort of flare up. They are all really great indications of the program that's running us, because if that program is not running and we can replace it with a conscious habit that serves how we do want to be.
So we're coming to the end now, and I just wonder if there's anything that I haven't offered you the opportunity to talk about that you would like to share before we finish.
I think it's really just, if you are feeling anything other than lovely, if you are struggling with any kind of ill health, if you find yourself feeling frustrated or angry in any way, or even, dare I say it, that you are recognizing that you, and this is the majority of people, reaching outside of yourself for something to make you feel better, then look into this work. Follow Gina, follow myself. Have a look at the communities of people that we relate to. Have a look at the information that is available out there for you to begin to help yourself. We can't do it for you. You know, you have your own magic wand. You are truly, truly amazing. You have a genuine power. You have a magnificence that is living within you. And if anything, if you feel any resonance from what we've discussed today, then just put the feelers out and ask simple questions. How can I learn more about how I can help myself? Because you will be amazed. And if you can just drip feed myself, I still do. But in the beginning, when I wanted to really transform, I drip fed myself every single day with something. And before long, it starts to make sense. You notice. Your life changes. You start to notice different things. So it really is just support and guidance is out there for you to understand. It's all in here.
Thank you. That's really, really great advice and a great way to finish. You know, it's not the grand gestures that work, is it? It's the little acts consistently done that build up and make such a big difference. I'd like to thank you so much for being a guest. It's been delightful. And I know from being with you that you have the most amazing energy and huge heart that can really support and help people. So thank you so much. We'll be putting all of the details in terms of website and so on, but could you just, as we finish, which Facebook group, which website should people go to?
Well, website's in the making, so it's trustvanessa.com. So you can have a look there, and on trustvanessa.com are all my links to my social media and YouTube. So you can connect with me there. I'm more than happy for people to reach out and just say hi and, any questions they've got, because we've got a wealth of experience and knowledge, but if people let us know what they want and how we can help.
Yes, that can make a huge difference, can't it?
Yeah, we've got lots to share, so ask us how we can.
Brilliant. Thank you so much for joining me today. And for those of you that are listening or watching, you know, today is the beginning of the rest of your life. Whatever's gone on in the past doesn't have to define how you're feeling now and the quality of your life now and in the future. You are the common denominator that you take into your life every moment of every day, and you truly are worth investing in yourself in order to be the best you can be. So thank you so much for joining us, and I look forward to speaking to you the next time. Once again, thanks for joining us.
If you're a businesswoman who is overwhelmed or suffering from imposter syndrome, who is tired of having one disastrous relationship after another, or who finds it hard just to say no, well, it's time to take care of you. You get the best out of life by contacting Gina Gardner, relationship coach and best-selling author and motivational speaker. Just visit genuinely-you.com, or you can email Gina directly at gina@genuinely-you.com. Take action now. Start to thrive rather than simply survive. Imagine being a highly successful, enlightened leader who is in complete alignment with your best self, who makes a positive difference on a daily basis. Let me introduce Gina Gardner, an expert in developing transformational leadership with over 30 years of experience. Gina has developed a unique and unrivaled approach to help you step into your genuine power to become an enlightened leader. And when you do, amazing things happen. Go to enlightenedleadership.co. or email Gina at gina@genuinely-you.com.
Hello there, and welcome back. This is the part of the show where I'm joined by my great friend, Rachel Davidson. She's our regular guest, and we're going to share with you our thoughts about a particular theme. The theme today is worrying. And, you know, over the last few months, there have been such a lot of things in the news for us all to worry about. The virus, the state of the world, the state of the economy, the environment. But what good does worrying do? And why do we worry? So, what is worry all about?
Well, we have had a lot here in the UK, haven't we? With all of the stress over the Brexit vote.
Yes.
Which, I mean, I think it's been 3-4 years of national worrying.
Yes.
And then, of course, as we record this, the coronavirus is, you know, making headlines. Worry is some kind of protection, isn't it? It's some attempt to keep yourself safe. It keeps, I suppose, you know, it can make you feel better in the sense that it makes you feel like you're raising your awareness so that when the attack comes, you'll be ready for it. And some people have turned this worry around the coronavirus into, I must go to the shop and clear the shelves of all food and stockpile it.
And toilet rolls.
Toilet rolls in particular, which is somewhat strange.
Bizarre.
But it's indicative, isn't it, of our animalistic programming for survival. Because, you know, when you're an antelope out on the plains and you've got tigers and leopards and cheetahs, oh my, looking for you, it kind of makes sense to have an element of worry going on all the time, to be watching for threats. But it doesn't really translate very well into our very sheltered modern day lives, does it? Because in actual fact, worrying about a virus doesn't stop you from coming into contact with it necessarily, and it doesn't stop you from catching it. In fact, actually, you could argue that the stress you're giving yourself by being constantly on high alert makes you more prone to the attack. That's my theory.
There's a great deal there, and I think I'd like to unpick it. We are, although we like to think we are hugely evolved, we are still at the core, we are animals.
We do have the limbic brains.
We do.
Yes.
And our ego, our conscious mind, the whole purpose of that is to keep us safe.
Yeah.
The challenge is in modern day society, as you so rightly said, when there is so much news being thrust at us, firstly, we don't know what's real and what's not. But the issue is that worry in and of itself does nothing to keep us safe. In fact, for many people, if you think of the number of people who are suffering from anxiety and depression, quite the opposite. Our brains cannot tell fact from fiction. It's one of the reasons why Homeric memories, you know, people who remember that in the summer it was always sunny, or they have a memory of something which somebody else who's been there at the time would say, well, that's not so, it was completely different. And so it's very difficult for us to separate what's real threat. You know, are we going to be chased by a tiger? Are we imminently in danger of our very survival being threatened? Or is this generated anxiety and worry, which actually goes nowhere? So for me, there's two very distinct approaches to worry. One is, am I in real danger, whether that's physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually? Is there a real threat? And how do I know? But if that's the case, then what do I need to do? What action do I need to take to either eliminate the threat or minimize it? And we can do that in a whole variety of ways. But it's where the threat is real. And one of the things that's really helpful is to actually grade that threat. A 10 out of 10 threat is I am about to be eaten by a saber-toothed tiger. I'm about to be run down by a bus. I am sitting next to somebody who's got Ebola. I need to get out of here. 1 out of 10 is everything's fine.
Yeah.
And I think if we can grade that worry, put it into some level of perspective,
yeah,
then we can start to take appropriate action. The second sort of worry is that gramophone record, for those of you who are old enough to remember gramophones, that go round and round and round, and very often it's much more active at night or in quiet times, where we are worrying about something in the past and actually we have no power to do anything about changing it, or we're anxious about what's going to happen in the future. But in that moment, there is no actual danger to us.
No, and just like the Baz Luhrmann sunscreen song says, the things that are, you know, you are most likely to fear are the ones that hit you, you know, out of the left side on the Tuesday afternoon. I mean, last Wednesday was a classic case in point for me. I'm pretty sure I was worrying about something in my life. I can't remember it because I got a phone call to say, your dad's been taken to hospital with chest pains.
Yeah.
These things I was not worrying about. So the actual act of worry, I mean, it shows that, you know, that I cannot remember what I was processing as my latest worry on the day, because some real stuff happened, real stuff that was worth worrying about once it had happened. But there was, I wasn't sat there thinking, what if my dad, what if this, what if that? Mm-hmm. So it's just an illustration, really, of half the things that you're worrying about.
I'd say greater.
Probably 99% of the things you're worrying about are never likely or really going to happen. You might start to create them happening by focusing on them if you believe in, certainly if you believe in the laws of manifestation and the fact that the universe will give you what you're thinking of, and your thoughts and turn into your beliefs, turn into your actions, then you will construct your circumstances. So if you're worrying about something dreadful, you might, in theory, create it. But the reality is that it's just a waste of energy. It's totally empty calorie use.
It's even more than that for me. I think, yes, it's wasted energy and you can and time. You can never have that time or energy back. They're both finite resources. But actually, it leeches your energy. It's what I call really expensive energy because it has no real positive purpose. In fact, quite the opposite. Because if there is a worry that's going around in your head, partly, I think it's identifying, is this worry real or not? Is there anything I can actually do to make that threat less? If there isn't, then how can I manage that threat more effectively? If it's something in the past, then the only thing that is worth doing is learning from the experience and moving on. Forgive yourself or others if that needs to happen. But worrying about what you've done or not done or how you've done it isn't going to change it.
No. I can remember when I was made redundant, it was very short notice, and it was a bit of a financial disaster. You know, very worrying, or at least the fear of being made, of having been made redundant and what would come next was a big worry.
We catastrophise, don't we? I've been made redundant. It's a financial hit.
Yeah.
I'm going to be out in the streets homeless. What will my children eat? It goes straight from, you know, a significant reason to be concerned to a catastrophe. I'm not going to be able to manage this. I'm going to be destitute.
Yeah.
That's the danger.
I know that one of my coping strategies at the time was to trudge up and down the village high street with my dog walking, because I had nothing else to do, thinking, okay, if this worry that I'm running around in my head, this awful fear actually happens, what would I do about it? Well, what could I do about it? Oh, I could sell my house, the profit in the house. I could live on the profit in the house. I could find somewhere else cheaper and smaller to live. That wouldn't be such a disaster. I went through all of the options of trying to face the worst case scenario and saying, well, what would I do about it? And actually, it really did calm me down. Didn't stop me worrying. The only thing that really stopped me worrying was when I'd secured a new job. But it did calm me down so that I wasn't in total panic over mode. And the husband at the time was terrible about these things. So he was no support whatsoever. So, you know, I really had to come up with my own coping strategies. And that was one of them. You know, what is the worst case?
Yeah.
And actually, do you die?
If you face the worst case and you can face that and recognise that there are things that you can do, then that helps enormously. I mean, one of the techniques that I've used myself and with clients is the mountain molehill test.
Yeah, that's a good one.
So when something happens, is this a mountain or a molehill? And often it feels like a mountain. And then ask yourself the question, in 24 hours' time, will it still be a mountain? Or will it have been downgraded? What about a week's time? Or a year? Or 5 years? And at the end of the life, your lifetime, is this something that I will remember as being significant, or will other things have replaced it? And I would say, you know, in all but the very most rare of cases, what we're worrying about can immediately be downgraded into a molehill.
Yeah.
And if you're going to downgrade it in a day, a month, a year, 5 years, well, why not do it now?
Do a bit of time travelling.
Absolutely. And give yourself that opportunity. Another great strategy is to write your worries down. Do a brain dump.
Yes.
And then take a highlighter pen. And with your highlighter pen, identify in one colour what is absolute fact. Yes. I know this. It's irrefutable.
Yes.
And then with another highlighter pen, what is my supposition? What is my worry generating? And then, having done that, to ask yourself the question, on a practical level, what can I do about this? And if there are things that you can do, then by going through this process, it can help you get out of the paralysis that's created by worry. Because I think that's one of the real challenges when we're really frightened. You know, the old flight and fright thing. A lot of people just get stuck like a rabbit in the headlights and feel they can't do anything. So if you can identify steps to do, who do you know that has been through this or has some expertise that you can ask? Or if none of those are available to you, then you can always come onto the website, genuinely-you, and ask us, and we'll do our best to help you put it into perspective and give you some simple steps to move things forward. But ultimately, if you can't change the problem, what you can do is change the way in which you respond to it. And by doing that, by taking control of the situation in that way, it moves from being something which is an immovable mountain into something which is much more manageable.
Yeah.
But it's interesting to me that, you know, our worry, all based on our beliefs, you know, our worry about, am I good enough? Will people recognize that I'm struggling? Will I look silly? Will I be able to manage this? Am I too old, too tall, too thin, too time poor, too financially poor? And those beliefs feed our worry.
Yes.
And it becomes this perpetual motion around, I believe this, I'm going to worry. The worry feeds into the belief feeds into the worry, and we go round and round in circles. Hence the metaphor of a broken gramophone record.
Yeah, and some commentators refer to it as creating your own prison.
Yeah.
Because you really do effectively limit your life and hold yourself back from doing things by having this worry, this anxiety that then becomes sort of a belief that I can't fill in the gap. So, you know, and why would you put yourself in a prison?
What I find interesting is that it's like putting, you know, when they free animals who've been in captivity and they put the cage there and they open the door, the animal still believes it's in prison and yet the door is open. And I think it's true for us that we may be sitting within that prison of worrying, but the door is open if you choose to go through it.
Yes.
And I'm not for a moment saying that this is easy, particularly if you are someone who habitually worries.
Yeah.
95% of our thinking is habitual.
Yeah.
So if worrying about stuff is your habitual default place, then that's where you'll go.
Yes.
But because that's been so in the past, doesn't mean that has to be true of the present and the future.
No, and I think that synthesizing of knowledge, of learning, yeah, that comes from one example. My daughter was particularly worried about going up a lesson for her riding activity.
Yeah.
And she had constructed a massive, overnight, a massive catastrophization, yeah, of what would happen. And in reality, the larger ride was fun and she did really well and she came out of it. And I said, right, so all of that worry, yeah, all of that energy,
yeah,
did it help in any way? No. So whenever she gets into worry mode, I say, yeah, 11 o'clock ride,
yeah,
the 11 o'clock ride all over again. Because I wanted to synthesize the learning from, oh, okay, so when I went horse riding, it wasn't so scary. So now that I am approaching my GCSE exams and I'm feeling, yeah, a similar sense of anticipation and worry, maybe I should recognize again that little steps taken slowly, yeah, just face the challenge and
so that experience acts as an anchor, doesn't it? You know, an anchor to a time when you have acted in a very resourceful way.
Yes.
And I think, you know, worry strips us of being able to access our resources.
Yes.
Interestingly, when people, in my experience with clients and with family and friends and staff and work colleagues,
uh-huh,
when something really serious happens,
mm, yeah,
what's interesting to me is, generally speaking, people go into, I'm going to cope with this, I'm going to get on,
yep,
and they take action. It's so often with the small things in life that the worries become disproportionate.
Yeah.
And I'll give you an example. I have a friend who all her life has suffered from anxiety and depression. Mm. You know, if I make a cup of tea, will it be the right strength? That level, but magnified.
Okay.
Diagnosed with cancer. And it was a serious cancer between the lining of the heart and okay, the wall in the pericardium.
Right.
And told that they had a 30% chance of survival.
Okay.
The change in that person, and I can honestly say for the first time, they started to live. They started to recognize that each day is precious and spending it worrying about the little stuff is such a waste.
I love that poem, and I can't remember who it is by, no, but when
don't
death,
sweat the
death whispers in your ear, live, for I am coming.
It's so true.
How come it takes people to face their own death before they live?
But it was a perfect example of somebody, yeah, and you know, well into their, in fact, I think 70, you know, 7 decades. I don't know when they started worrying, but I've known them yeah, for 35 years, and they have worried all their lives. Gets what could be a life sentence, and then suddenly, oh, I'm not worried about that. I'm going to get better. I'm going to focus on that. And thankfully, amazing, 3 years later, they're still alive.
Still.
And they haven't gone back,
oh, good,
to the old pattern, which is really, really fantastic.
Yeah, yeah, good.
So we're going to draw this conversation to a close. Mm. And what I would say to everybody here is, I'm not making light of worries. I know that everybody has worries in their lives.
Oh.
And they're there at some level to protect us and to help us take action. But if your worries are actually getting to be overbearing, if they're taking over, then it is time to take action. There's lots of resources on the Genuinely You site. The links are in the show notes. But please do take action. Your life is just so precious, and it makes sense to make the most of every day. And don't wait until you get a terrible situation or diagnosis to learn to live life to the full, to open your prison and to move there. Now, Rachel is a number one international best-selling author in the same way I am. She writes novels with a spiritual bent. I have to say, they're brilliant.
Yeah.
The Point of Him and The Truth of Her, both available on my website or on Amazon and all good bookshops, and you'll find all of my books. And if you're interested in looking at more about how you can develop strategies to live a life full of happiness, of success and fulfillment, then Thriving Not Surviving, The Five Secret Pathways to Happiness, Success and Fulfillment are again available on the website, notes below, or on Amazon. I look forward to seeing you in the next show. Take care now.